before we welcome our next guest on, I'm going to do this for my, I'm going to do something personal.
All right. Mind.
So in 1988, the album Vivid came out from, of course, God, I'm losing my train of thought. Living Color.
Yeah.
And when I, back then I played in a cover band. We've talked about it for years. And I was telling Casey off air, when you play in a cover band, every now and then you'll throw in a song that the band agrees, okay, we're going to play something that we're going to play this just to show off our musicianship a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so Living Color was just, we loved the band. But we didn't want to play Cult of Personality because it was too obvious.
Right.
So we played two other songs from that album, Open Letter to a Landlord.
Great song.
And I'm going to play a little clip. Now, this is from an old boombox at a bar that I recorded this on. But another song we love playing, and it was to show off our musicianship, was Middleman. So I wanted him to hear this while he's on hold just a little bit. Man, it's got such a cool groove, and we'd go into that just for us. We were like, we're having fun now.
Yeah,
this is
you had awesome. To give yourself a bone.
Huge fan of this band, and not only that, he and his bandmates graciously came to our Camp Out for Hunger and performed a few years ago. And
one of my favorite moments of all time.
Blew us away. Yeah. Please welcome, from Living Color, Vernon Reed.
Yeah!
Hey, Vernon.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you doing?
We're doing great. Listen, I want to point out that the reason we decided to give you a buzz and see if you would come on was you said some really cool things about the radio station in a tweet exchange and how the station was integral into kind of getting the ball rolling for that album, Vivid, which was the breakout for you guys.
Absolutely. I remember it quite well. Middleman was our first single, and it really kind of, we kind of did a little something on college radio, but that was about it. And I mentioned about the fact that, you know, that our next shot, and I think our last shot, was going to be Cult of Personality. And WMMR was the station that played it first, added it first, and got phones on it first, and that got the ball rolling, you know what I mean? And I remember that very, very clearly. I know you were getting tortured by our radio guy, Harvey Leeds, back in the day.
Well, that's what he had to do. That's the job.
I want to give a shout-out to Biff Kennedy, who was our Sony rep in Philly at the time.
Okay.
You know, but we were very, you know, it was like, you know, like Oedipus and, you know, that all came later. You know, Massachusetts, I think. Boston added at like right after that, but that's kind of the way it went. And we always loved playing Philly. It was the first stop on the Stones tour, the Steel Wheels tour. That was our first show. So we've always had a very close affiliation with Philly. Philly's got legendary status in terms of musicians coming through Philly. You know, everyone from Coltrane, Benson, the list goes on and on. And so I love that town, and so it's an honor to even bring it up. And so when it came up, basically people were saying, "Oh, you know, Cult was released," and I just happened to glance at it. I was like,
it's all good.
and I was like, "Oh yeah," and then it just the memories came flooding back, and just thinking, you know, like it started. WMMR really started it, and then we did the video. You know, because we had got this started to get this momentum, and then we did the video with Drew Carolyn, and that broke on MTV, and then the rest of the country followed.
Wow. I remember, I have so many questions for you. Number one, I want to go to, you know, you said our last shot, so I assume that, you know, that album represented for you guys, this is the best. This clearly is our sound. This is the best, and if this doesn't hit, it just ain't going to work. Is that what you meant by that?
Well, it's kind of like we were... You know, generally, you got three bites at the apple in terms of major labels. You know, they try, depending on, it's very political. It depends on how strong your A&R man. You know, Mike Kaplan was, you know, he had a string of successes and hits and things, so he was in a pretty good position. But it's also like the zeitgeist of, you know, how much risk they were willing to put in. You know, we were very lucky because there was a switch of leadership, you know, Al Teller was a, the head of Epic. He left, and that was just Dave Glue came in, and Dave Glue, who was an Atlantic executive, he saw us play a show at the Ritz, and he said, "You know, you remind me of a young Led Zeppelin. You remind me of a Led Zeppelin because he worked on Led Zeppelin." So, in other words, all these everything had to line up. But at the same time, you know, I think about the fact that it took we had already become a local. You know, we rose up through the ranks locally. You know, we played Irving Plaza, we played all these different clubs in New York. We played mainly CBGBs, so we were really on track. But we have gotten rejected by a lot of the labels, and it took getting hooked up with the most famous person in rock and roll for us to advance.
Mick Jagger?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So on the one hand, you know, God bless him, you know, and it's great that he came through. But the fact that we have to have that person.
Yeah. It's wild. It's wild, Vernon, because if you stop and think about it, and we've been in the radio business long enough to know how important those A&R people were. And I wonder now, with all the surplus of ways, you know, with the with streaming and YouTube and all the different ways to get music out, if we might see a hybrid of that kind of person come back, because they sort of have gone away in large part. But somebody who's an advocate to help get behind something, use the sheer force of will and belief in an artist to help them cut through all the noise. Do you know what I'm saying?
I absolutely agree. I think the idea of like almost influencer A&R is a kind of idea, concept that whose time has come. You know, clearly somebody that's actually has an ear, but also is got their, you know, is really on their, got their finger on the pulse of what's going on, can really spot viral trends before they happen. You know, like how a quarterback throws to where the running back is going to be.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like, so that's the idea, is like not to be, to spot the pre-trend before it becomes a trend and then time it. So that kind of person is evolving. I believe that.
I loved what you guys did. The reason your music and that album stood out to me, you and one other band, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, were bringing funk, you were bringing soul power into heavy music. And it was so refreshing and cool. But I remember it really standing out. Was it resistance at first when you guys came out with that sound?
Well, yeah, because people didn't, you know, number one, people were, trying to figure out where we were coming from. Mm-hmm. And I think people got it really twisted, you know what I mean? Because rock had become so identified with white people at that point, and it was almost like a disconnect between rock's black roots. Well, the thing about us is that we never disconnected it. So it was never an identity crisis. It was never an identity problem. The problem was with other people looking at it and trying to figure it out, but we were very clear the connection between how Led Zeppelin became Led Zeppelin, how the Stones became the Stones. And we were very clear about the connection between Miles Davis, a Sly Stone, and a Jimi Hendrix. So it was never, and the other thing, it wasn't just historical, it was also very current, because I grew up with bands like, my first concert was Parliament Funkadelic, playing with War, right? The Isley Brothers, I mean, the Isley Brothers and Ernie Isley don't ever get enough credit, because they kept that kind of Hendrix sound alive, but also with hits on the radio, like Who's That Lady and Fight for Power. So this was like a sound that was very alive. It wasn't like a thinking of backwards. It was like a very current type of sound, as well as, you know, the influence of growing up with how the Beatles radically changed. Like, they went from I Want to Hold Your Hand to Helter Skelter. I mean, that's like a band becoming, it's like a band starting out as, I don't know, like the Everly Brothers and becoming Radiohead before your very eyes.
Well, you know, it's funny, because you have, the music is so good. The music on its own, and obviously the band's ability to perform and deliver it live. But then what happens in the studio, and I think just in production, a lot of people who aren't familiar with the process of production and audio recording and capturing and accenting and accentuating an artist's capability, That album in particular, Vivid, you can hear, you can know that sound instantly when you hear it. And it seemed to be sort of a perfect storm of what you needed at that time.
I give full credit to Ed Stasium, and actually Ed Stasium and Mick Jagger as producers. Mick produced two songs. He produced Glamour Boys and he produced Which Way to America, which Way to America is one of the most aggro. It ends the album, and it's an incredibly aggro tune. So he was great. And Ed Stasium, who had been working with Mick on Primitive Cool, we brought him on as a producer. And, you know, Culture Person, we played it in the clubs. We actually did a different arrangement of it. And we actually did, like, a intro. Like, you know how Desperate People has this kind of intro?
Yeah.
Most of the riff? We actually took the chords from the bridge, actually were like a kind of an intro, kind of very grand, and then we hit the riff, right?
Yep.
And Ed, he said, skip the intro, get to the sample, which we changed. The first sample, we used to do Free at Last, Thank God Almighty, We Are Free. It was MLK, okay. And we switched it to Malcolm X. So he said, no, man, play the sample, just skip the intro and get to the riff. So that's the value of a producer intervention. Because we were performing the song a certain way, and he said, man, just get right to it. So, yeah, so that kind of thing, I spent a lot of time with Ed in the studio working on things, and the way he used percussion, if you listen to the record, really listen to it, he does, there's a lot of sound, even though it's just four of us playing the instruments.
Yeah.
There are a lot of little touches that he puts in that fill that kind of sonic space, you know, so he was fantastic. I talked to Ed yesterday. So it's fantastic. You know what I mean? I love that guy. He's an incredible producer.
Hey, Vernon, you know, about the video for Cult of Personality, and that's when it really exploded for you guys, was when that hit. You know, there's several things that I remember when my first reaction of seeing that video, because it was so big. You guys had a very specific look. You know, here's a black heavy metal, you know, hard rock band. I'm like, wow, that stands out to me. Look at that guy's hair. You know, Corey had this really long, wild dreads. And he was wearing a wetsuit for some reason, which was interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, I saw, you know, you shredding. I'm like, look at this dude rip. And one of the things that also really stood out to me was your guitar with those neon colors on it. And I hadn't seen a guitar pop like that, you know, since Eddie Van Halen's Frankenstein. It had a really signature look to it like that. Do you still have that guitar, first of all?
I do, and that was made by the ESP company of Japan, but really specifically, it was the ESP, the New York office, you know, and it was myself and the late, great Ronnie Drayton. You know, we were both endorsers, and we were New York-based, and Paul Skelton worked in that shop, and Paul Skelton was amazing. He had this thing. They would send you guitars from Japan, and he had this way. He would pick a guitar out of a case, and he had this one strum quality control. So he would take a guitar case, he would strum it. He was from Texas, you know. So
yeah.
He would strum it, and he'd go, POS, send it back.
Oh, wow.
I could work, strum, I could work with this. Strum, I could salvage this one. Strum. No good. Yeah, I sat and watched him do it with a bunch of guitars. And when my guitar came through, it was because they had done this finish. It was a Kulik finish, where they take several layers of paint and then they kind of sand it down, and that's how you get this kind of almost video feedback kind of effect.
Yep.
And that guitar was spot on.
Yeah.
From the moment it arrived and came out the case. And I still have it. And in fact, the ESP company reissued. They did a Cult 86 limited issue of 86 guitars, which all sold out, which is great. But I'm actually considering donating the original to the African American Historical Museum.
Wow.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, because there's a whole music exhibit, and they rotate the thing. And we played for the opening of the African American History Museum.
Wow.
And at Smithsonian. So I was talking to these people, and I was like, you know, because I was thinking about, like, what, you know what I mean? And I tried playing it, and the guitar is heavy as hell.
But wait, can you tell them, though, if I really want it, can I have it back?
You know? I know. Well, you know what, though, man? I'm a, you know, that's like Yeah, it's a loan. It'll be on loan.
It'll
be
right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Vernon, I have a question, and I always like getting tips and suggestions from musicians. Can you tell us what you're listening to now? And it can be new or old. It doesn't matter. But you know what's floating your boat these days?
Oh my goodness! I actually have been listening. Like, people are familiar with Esperanza Spalding as a jazz musician, but she put out these two electric records. And, De-Evolution, really, really, really good records. And so Esperanza Spalding, like, her last two records are amazing. And I've been listening to Fiona Apple's record, Fetch the Bolt.
All right, so do you like that? Because I heard all the buzz
people
about it.
People are divided about it. But, you know, I actually kind of was like, Fiona Apple, she first came out, I was like, oh, she's cool. And I really wasn't. And people are very, very opinionated about her, and I just decided, because I remember like from the first thing, and then I hadn't really checked in, so I said, you know, let me check this out, and I was immediately in, because there's something about the way she expresses herself that's very conversational. It's very, and I can't tell whether it's autobiographical or not, but some of the stuff. That she, her wordplay, like the song Shamika, is so great. I mean, because it's also kind of the way she, the way the music is arranged, is kind of like, it reminds me of, almost of Vince Guaraldi, the way the piano is very dominant. And it reminds me almost of Vince Guaraldi's music for the Peanuts. Now, I love that music. Like all of Vince Guaraldi stuff. The Great Pumpkin and all the Christmas special.
Oh, it's great! It's hands down my favorite Christmas music of all time, and just his trio was legendary. Love them.
Legendary, great jazz musician, and I think he got dogged with. Man, you do cartoon music, but that music was very emotive to me and very made a big impact on me. So when I heard these kind of ostinatos and things that Fiona Apple was doing, I was like, you know what? She's on some. You know, I get it. I mean, it got to me. And then just the way she talks about, like, under the table and all this different stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, it feels like a conversation. It feels like having a conversation with somebody. And it's almost like a perfect music for this time. She sounds like someone that's, like, over it.
Yeah, so here's the deal. Lyrically, I think she's absolutely dynamic and genius. Musically, I couldn't. And we were actually, this is like the second time we're talking about Fiona. We were talking about her off air. I've seen her in concert. I've seen, up close and personal. She also showed up on a Tiny Desk series with the Watkins Family Hour. And I was like, okay, so the Fiona Apple that we knew in the late 90s, early 2000s is, you know, she's had... she's different, you know, and I love the experimental nature of it all. Musically, I just couldn't, I really couldn't find myself getting, I was really trying to
it's
like
okay.
it. I know, and I know it's okay, but I wish I was able to listen to it the same way that you do.
Yeah, well, you know, things are funny that way. You know, sometimes things that you don't get, right? Like you're trying to scratch your head at, like, you know, when Radiohead did Kid A, there's no drums. On the first two songs, right? On the first couple of songs, they actually aren't drums. And I was like, where are the drums? And I that was like, it bothered me. And then eventually said, you know what? This is dope. Like, it occurred to me that this is actually taking, they're kind of taking the form and they're messing with it in a way that's brilliant, doing something. A lot of things that we turn around and suddenly we're like tapping our toe to it. The first time you hear it, it's challenging. It's like, that's not what I, And sometimes it's weird how things will creep up on you. And it may not be the whole record, but it might be a tune. It's interesting how we take things in. Sometimes things will hit us right away, and they're great, and then you fall out of love with it. And so other things are like, I don't know about that. And suddenly you're tapping your toe to it. It's a weird psychology with sound and music.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Vernon, because it's interesting. Do you think, and you've made some jazz references as we've been talking, we obviously know that rock comes from the blues, you know, a large part, but jazz also has had an influence, and how much do you think jazz has influenced the sound of the kind of rock that you deliver and the kind of rock that we all tend to gravitate towards?
Well, it's interesting because I grew up in a time period, you know, when I was much younger, you know, fusion music had kind of hit, and also prog music, right? So music like, you know, Cult of Personality, that riff is one part of that riff is Mahavishnu Orchestra. Mm-hmm. Like, hearing the John McLaughlin's, you know, pioneering jazz rock fusion band, you know, hearing music like the New Race and the Dance of Maya, that had an influence, as well as hearing all the other, like Zeppelin and all the other emerging, you know, like Sabbath and all the other emerging music at that time. So it's a kind of all these different influences had a part to play. And think about the career of Jeff Beck. You know, Jeff Beck was, you know, this kind of guitar wunderkinder, yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then he collided with fusion, specifically the keyboard player from Mahavishnu Orchestra, Jan Hammer. And they had a collaboration for many years. And his music has changed ever since. And occasionally he'll dip back into rockabilly, but his music has become this kind of, he's influenced the whole instrumental rock thing very profoundly. And, you know, like Eddie Van Halen, one of his favorite guitarists is the late, great Alan Holdsworth. Alan Holdsworth, who played with Tony Williams and played with Soft Machine, he influenced generations. Like, all the shredding and hyper-shred that, like, Alan Holdsworth, like, you know, Eddie Van Halen, Alan Holdsworth, they had, Steve Vai, massive influence across the culture of guitar. Yeah. So these things are all part and parcel. I think about my list of influences. Well, my influences were, like, Santana, Hendrix, McLaughlin, Fripp, Jan Ackerman, Tommy Bolin, who played on Cobham's record. You know what I mean? So there's all of this different, all these different places, but there were also local people. There was a guy I grew up with named Arthur Rames. I talk about him all the time on Twitter. And he had passed on, like 89, and it was heartbreaking thing. That guy was one of the greatest musicians I ever saw in my life because he played guitar like ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he also played saxophone like Cold Spring. I'm not exaggerating. And he would go on the piano and totally destroy it. So it was just, and he was a thorough, he was a fusion guy, but also a jazz guy. And people like Jaco Pastorius, you know, who played with Joni Mitchell and Weather Report. All of these different people had a huge, they changed the fabric of what rock is and what rock was. You think about the influence of jazz. You know, think about Van Morrison and Moondance. That's jazz. Like, that Moondance, that's very influenced by jazz.
Yes. And
you know, Sonny Rollins played on a Rolling Stones record. You know, it goes on.
You've mentioned a handful of names here, like Tony Williams and Jaco Pastorius and Billy Cobham, and who are the greatest musicians that ever walked the face of the earth. But they can also be so incredibly complex in what they're doing that it's so hard for the average ear to hear and understand and take that in. And I have as much respect for those people as I do for those who can take many fewer notes and pick the right melodies and so on.
Absolutely.
And turn them into masterpieces as well.
Absolutely.
And they all influence each other.
I think that's a very important point. Like Neil Young. I love Neil Young and his crazy, raw electric guitar playing, as well as his acoustic playing. You know, he does not give a, you know.
Yeah, you're right. He's Neil Young. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's also part of the thing. It's not, I think that the spirit of punk, the spirit of a Kurt Cobain, God rest him, Chris Cornell, you know, Chris, like Soundgarden, they were a perfect marriage of very in your face, very raw, but they could be very dense and very complex with the altered tunings, but the lyrics.
Odd signature, time signatures, yeah.
Oh, odd time signatures, but you know, so much of his great music, of their great music, you know, like, you know, Chris Cornell was dealing with a lot of deep, heavy things, and he put it out there, you know, 4th of July. Like, my favorite tune of theirs is The Day I Tried to Live. I mean, I'm telling you, that's one of those tunes that, for me, having been in the business and seeing all of the stuff that I saw, in a way, that song had a very specific kind of resonance.
Do you think that there's something cosmic that ends up bringing these people together? Do you know what I mean? Like, you have, all these talented people out there that, can rip and shred, but for some reason, it is something that brought them together that made them a success. You know, maybe they would have had success somewhere else, but they didn't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, we all ran away to join the circus. You know what I mean?
Every one of us. Yeah.
Certain things are fated to be. And, you know, I think about like an Amy Winehouse.
Ugh.
And you know what I mean? And it's just heartbreaking and heartrending to think about her. Because, you know, she's a person who, you know, that's on rehab. I jumped out of my skin because it was like one of these things. Oh, finally, I'm hearing someone telling the truth. Right? She's actually it just had the ring of quote unquote authenticity. Just that, you know, when she goes no, no, no. I mean, that's generations of people that have struggled with addiction.
Yeah.
And all the rest of it. And her truth ultimately, you know, she struggled and ultimately she lost that struggle. But you know, that's the thing. So many of our greatest, the Marvin Gayes, the Sam Cooks, you know, they come through and they will say the truth. And they, you know, and whether they have hits or big hits or whether or not, when you hear the truth coming from a singer, when you hear the truth coming out of a guitar or a horn or a violin or a drum, it's unmistakable. It is unmistakable. It does, if it's heavy and dark, if it's light and folksy, the truth will out.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's interesting, though, Vernon, and to touch on what you said, Casey, about, you know, cosmically, is there a reason that these groups of people get together? And yes, they go out and musically change the fabric. I however, now with YouTube, Vernon, I never knew how many virtuoso musicians out there existed.
Oh, yeah.
That there are people that are that... that have that ability, and yet they are bagging groceries, and this is just a thing they do on the side. But they're incredible musicians.
Absolutely.
I had no idea that many existed. You know,
the world is essentially unfair. You know, like you think about it, like Jimi Hendrix. You know, Jimi Hendrix would never if he hadn't taken that trip to England. You know, it wouldn't have happened. You know, in fact, it just wasn't. You know, the British invasion, in fact, he was one of the artists that helped to reverse the British invasion trend and kind of bring it back to the States.
Yeah.
You know, everybody is on their journey and there's no guarantees. Like I mentioned Arthur Rains, that people don't know his name. He's the greatest musician I've ever personally seen. Not a famous person. And, you know, who can say why these things happen?
Vernon, I'm sorry to interrupt, but once again, you bring up Jimmy, and once again, it's a black musician going, by the way, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, but also, you know, he was influenced by Bob Dylan directly as a songwriter, you know? And Bob Dylan just put out, like, one of the best records of his career. I mean, people have counted Bob Dylan out for, you know, when he get Time Out of Mind, it was, oh, my God. Then, you know, Love and Theft came out, but this record, Rough and Ready Ways, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And part of the reason it's incredible is because it's him. When you hear Murder Most Foul from his lips, it's a different situation.
It's fascinating listening to you because, you know what, the same way I love hearing a director who is a fan of film, you're a musician who adores music. So you've never lost that complete immersion and adoration for it, and it's just fascinating to hear your perspective on this stuff. So
I want to just mention two bands that are on the opposite ends of the spectrum. Super, I want to mention the band Car Bomb. If you're into the super heavy stuff, Car Bomb.
Okay. Car Bomb.
Other band, Car Bomb.
All right.
But, you know, it's and unbelievable is a band. There's a band called Thank You Scientist. Let me tell you.
what do they sound like?
I'm writing all these down.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Imagine what it sounds like. Imagine like if you took early Chicago and Frank Zappa and put
what?
It together.
Wow. Zappa and Chicago.
And the that's a big sound.
And the guitarist Tom Monda is out of. I mean, say that to Tom Monda. In the top tier.
Okay.
Ridiculous, but they're like the super heavy band. But the parts, it's like take early Chicago and take Dream Theater and Chicago.
All right,
seriously, that blows
like,
my mind.
That kind of like, it's like super prog band, but with horn sections, trumpet player, and sax player. Ridiculous. But Tom on the guitars, redonkulous.
All right.
And they're from Montclair, New Jersey. Thank you, scientists. You heard it from me. They have a record, Terraformers, and several records. Check them out.
All right, man. We appreciate it.
We'll get people on that. We will definitely listen to it. All right, absolutely. Well, Vernon, we're glad we came across this tweet where you mentioned MMR, and it's awesome to catch up with you, man. We'll talk anytime you have time.
Oh, my goodness. I want to give a quick shout out to my Philly brothers, Jamal Dean Takuma and Calvin Weston from the Freeform Funky Freak, and all the rest of the posse, all of the rest of the Philly posse. Yeah, I love you guys, thank you so much you were critical in the band's career.
Thank you.
And we so appreciate it and acknowledge it. So, y'all, everybody stay safe. These are crazy sci-fi times we're living through. And, we'll get through it.
We'll see you on the other end, and hopefully we can get another situation like we had at the campout, which still stands as, I think, for all of us, one of the absolute most incredible, surreal moments when you guys played for us out at that event. Yeah. So.
It was our pleasure. Hey, okay, guys.
All right, Vernon. Take care.
Have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Vernon Reed. Wow. Of In Living Color. Not In Living Color. Living Color.
Yeah.
We were just going to talk to him for like 5 minutes, I thought. But that dude is a student of music. No
question.
Don't
you love hearing that zeal and his take on it? I mean, it goes across all realms. I mean, when he was bringing up legends of jazz. He was bringing up when you go from Joni Mitchell to, Dream Theater.
Yeah,
he's covering all across the spectrum.
Nice, that was cool, man.
Do you want to hear any of? Because I have Terraformer by Thank You Scientist. You want to hear one of their songs?
Sure. Well, it's not the whole song.
No.
Check some of it. Yeah.
All right, well, this one, I'll give you four choices. Do you want Wrinkle, Fix Milder, whatever that is, Swarm, or Son of a Serpent?
Wrinkle's fine.
Yeah, okay, Wrinkle's fine with you.
I'm a Wrinkle man. You're a Wrinkle man? So he said it was Chicago meets Zappa meets Dream Theater, something like that. So they've got a horn section. They've got to be a big band, I would imagine. A lot of members. All right. Yeah, very, very fusion. Yeah. Crank it up a little bit, guys.
I could get behind this.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah.
Yeah, you hear the jazz.
I
hear a lot of Weather Report and like you said, Mahavishnu in there.
I love the Mahavishnu
type of stuff.
Orchestra.
Yeah.
My brother was taking guitar. His teacher was a Mahavishnu Orchestra. Psycho.
Their musicianship is just those bands. Like Dream Theater, these progressive bands. It's hard to follow.
Yeah.
Per se, you can't like tap your foot to it.
It's an earworm that lives with you with everything.
But it's unbelievable musicianship.
Yeah, yeah.
For more Preston and Steve, listen live weekday mornings on WMMR. Subscribe to the Daily Preston and Steve podcast on iTunes or listen live online at WMMR.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.